Good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I am here in the studio with Doc.
Yes.
How are you, Doc?
I'm doing fine. I didn't know I was going to have a speaking part today.
You do have a speaking part. And on the phone, we have Raphael McDonald. Raphael, are you there?
I am right here. Good morning, David.
Good morning. And we have a nice, clear connection, too. I usually have to fiddle a little bit to get our guest on the air. But welcome, Raphael. Now, the reason I asked you to come on, and thank you for coming on, because you have whatever Patty has, and everybody seems to have it. But thank you for getting up at this hour and joining us. Reason I asked you on was yesterday Dallas County Community Colleges voted for non-discrimination protections for the transgender community. Tell us what happened.
Well, this has been the culmination of some work that goes back to last June, actually. You know, this is one of these things that it's taken us 6.5 months to get there, but what Dallas County Community College did with one dissenting vote out of a panel of five board members, they voted to add gender identity and gender expression to three different district policies, one of them that covers employees and two of them that cover students.
And what's the difference between, what is the protection? Let's just explain that.
The protection, says that we do not discriminate in hiring, in education, in anything that would happen in terms of a college life against a variety of categories, your traditional categories, race, religion, age, so forth. They added sexual orientation some years ago. I can't tell you exactly when, but it was before 2008 or somewhere around there at the very least. And they've now added specifically gender identity and gender expression.
And for anybody who's listening who doesn't understand what those terms actually even mean, what is gender identity? What's gender expression?
Sexual orientation, who you love, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Gender identity is to your internal sense of who you are in terms of as being a man or a woman, and gender expression is how you physically manifest that particular expression.
Okay. So this specifically benefits or protects the transgender community.
Correct. And, we've heard from a number of folks, going through this process, particularly here towards the end, we heard from a number of folks who were students who are transgender. Mm-hmm. Or knew a transgender student. Here at the center, we have a group called GEAR, which is for the transgender community. One of the members of GEAR, one of the longtime members of GEAR, is an employee of the district who transitioned on the job.
And were there any problems? Was that the reason that this was suddenly something that you felt was necessary to do?
No, I think this is kind of, this ended up being kind of two things influenced it. This will be a little bit of a long answer, but I'll try to make it as short as possible. You know, we've been doing work, you think back, on the transgender community for some time now. I think probably since June of 2010 is when we really started taking a close look at policies.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing this already for some time when we approached a DCCCD. There were two kind of things that encouraged it. One of it was our work with DISD, and that was discovering that kind of, pretty much all policies are the same. They're kind of all, some of them are drafted by the TASB, which is the Texas Association of School Boards, for, let's say, elementary school districts, public school districts, rather. They also do the same thing for, two-year or, quote, junior colleges. And when I discovered that, it was easy enough to be able to identify what policies needed to be changed at DCCCD, and then the process started. We started in June to try and make that happen. And the reason we started in June is that by that point, some of the similar work that we had done by DISD was all but finished. It just had to go back before the board. So it was just kind of a case, if we had the time, so let's move forward with doing this.
But then it took until just yesterday.
Right. As kind of the thing, what ended up happening is that there were three of us that initially met with Deanna Flores, who is a member of the DCCC board back in June. The person who really gets a lot of credit and should get a lot of credit for helping get that meeting lined up was Jesse Garcia, who at the time used to live here in Dallas, now lives in D.C.
And used to do the morning show here on KNO.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Jesse knew Deanna. She is the, I believe, the longest serving Hispanic elected official here in Dallas County, what I believe he told me. So he set up a lunch meeting. We had lunch with Deanna, myself, Jesse, and Rebecca Solomon, who is a vice president at Bank of America, and is she helped to get a variety of transgender protections at B of A when she was based at their corporate offices in Charlotte, and is now based here locally. She's presented it out in Eagle, really cool woman. But anyway, we all met for lunch over at Ojeda's, and we talked with about what we wanted, and she said, sure, I'll do what I can, and we'll start pointing you in the right direction. She ended up pointing us to a woman by the name of Ellen Benson at the district, who was their district HR vice president. And we ended up getting a meeting with her a little more than a month later. By that point, Jesse was either already on his way to D.C. or leaving within a matter of days. So Omar Narvaez, who is the president of Stonewall Democrats and also with the Rainbow Lulac Council, ended up stepping in for Jesse. We met with Ellen. We showed her what we wanted. You know, as I mentioned, we were able to identify the policies fairly quickly, and Ellen's actually just had joined the district fairly recently from either Northern California or Oregon. I don't remember off the top of my head. And she said, yeah, I don't think this will be any problem. So that's kind of where we left things in July. Oh, this isn't going to be any problem. And then there was kind of silence for a while.
And what was the silence about?
Some of it, I think, was circumstantial. Ellen,
just summer vacation, maybe?
Some of it was involved. Ellen had a death in her immediate family, and she took off several weeks. And, you know, her thought was, when we met in July, oh, I bet I can get some language drafted fairly quickly. We'll run it through the legal department. We'll let, you know, Dr. Lassiter and the executive staff look at it. We'll probably get this on the agenda September, October. And, okay, I thought, okay, great, fine, wonderful, beautiful. That won't be, you know, anything big about it. And they'd actually, from what I had heard, were talking about having a briefing on it, a closed-door briefing with the lawyers, you know, as early as October. In fact, that was what even what Deanna had indicated that it might be the case. And then things started falling off the track.
Mm-hmm. And what happened? Did they have the briefing with the attorneys?
They did end up having the briefing. The briefing ended up, though, actually slipping to the November board meeting. And as part of, you know, the way boards work, you know, sometimes they go into closed session to get advice from their legal counsel. And so this issue had come up. You'd written about it for The Voice. Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be, I don't know if it was reticence or what, but there seemed to be a lot of questions. And what ended up happening is that we got a letter from the legal department. I guess it was the first week or so of November. And the letter said, thank you. We had read him in the meantime, the Sun had read them in the meantime. And the letter said, thank you for writing us about asking to expand the policies to include gender identity and gender expression. After much consideration and so forth, we have decided not to expand our policies. You know, we feel that we are already covered with our existing policies, and we feel that we're already covered within the existing City of Dallas policies, which cover these protections.
And that's interesting. The City of Dallas does have transgender protections, protections based on gender identity and expression, right?
The City of Dallas has it based on gender identity, but the City of Dallas is, there's a couple things within the City of Dallas policy. Number one, it doesn't really list it as a separate class. What it does is it redefines sexual orientation to include gender identity. And part of that, I think, is because of the way the policy was actually set up. And part of it had to do with the fact that, you know, this is an older policy. Dallas's policy, I believe, was drafted in 2002, something like that. It's been around a while.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the policy explicitly exempts governmental organizations, which it kind of quasi-defines as any organization that levies a tax to keep itself going. And that was the whole situation. If you go back to DART, that DART was not covered by the City of Dallas non-discrimination policy. So, you know, by definition of that, neither would a DCCCD.
Okay, so any taxing entity in an area needs to set its own policies.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, not to mention, you know, any branch of the state or the federal government. So, but I mean, in terms of anything local, if it levies a tax, it had to set its own policy.
And Dallas can't do anything to anything that happened to anyone who does something on a Dallas County Community College District campus because they're their own governmental body, basically.
They're their own governmental body. Not to mention that of the nine or so campuses of DCCCD, there are some within the City of Dallas limits. There are some that are not.
Actually, most of them
are
not.
For example, they're in Mesquite.
Well, most of them. The only two that are actually in the city are El Centro and Mountain View.
Right.
The others
right.
are outside the city limits. So City of Dallas rules just wouldn't apply to them,
you know,
necessarily.
Richland is, I think, Richardson, I believe. So
right.
they don't have anything. Northlake is Irving, and so forth.
So, okay. So, so finally, you convinced them that they needed to have their own policies, I guess.
Well, it was after that initial letter was written. Mm-hmm. You know, we wrote them back quickly and pointed this out. You all did a story, and people started calling and writing and kind of corrected them on this point.
And so they decided they did need a policy.
They did need a policy. And, you know, I Dr. Lassiter, who's the chancellor of the district, deserves a great deal of credit on this. This is a man who, you know, is involved with a lot of diversity organizations. In fact, he was the keynote speaker at a lunch that the Texas Diversity Council had back in June that the center's executive director and CEO, C.C. Cox, was a presenter at. And it just happened that the presentation that she made at that conference was on inclusive workplace policies.
Hmm.
So it was one of those... That was also kind of an impetus for us to move forward with the district. It's like if you have the top person there, you know, hearing about this stuff, you know, that helps.
No,
and, you know, he didn't have a vote on the board, but he certainly can, you know, talk to board members and say, look, you know, we need to do this. And they by and large did.
Well, now, this really doesn't seem like it was an issue that was caused by... With DART, there were some specific incidents that happened.
Right.
And DART's policy was a reaction to that. And we can talk about that a little bit later. But this policy seems to be, let's just get the right policy in place. And there doesn't seem to have been a lot of objection. It seems to have been more like a, do we really need this type of thing? Because we're not discriminating.
Right, right. You know, and that was one thing that the attorney pointed. The attorney pointed to the experiences of the member of our gear group, Lilith, as being a positive thing. When Lilith transitioned, she received a great deal of support within her office and by the district. So, I mean, it wasn't a reactive. It was more of a proactive thing.
Mm-hmm.
What helped us, I think, is the fact that, you know, we have started seeing more of these policies, certainly locally. The statistic that I cited within the remarks, and I think I gave the same number for anyone who was attending Transgender Day of Remembrance earlier this year, 31,000 public sector employees here in the immediate Dallas area are now covered by some of these expanded policies that we worked at the center.
Mm.
You know, Dallas, DART, DISD, Dallas County, and DFW International Airport. And now we could add about 7,000 more employees at Dallas County College and 80,000 students.
And of the 80,000 students that are covered and maybe 7,000 employees, do we have any estimate as to how many of them actually are affected by this policy? Actually, everybody's affected by it. Everybody has a gender identity. But
right.
I'm talking about, do we know how many transgender students there are there, or there's really no way to know, is there?
I don't really think there is. No. I don't really think that is. I mean, I've heard anecdotal evidence of a few here and a few there, but, you know, this may encourage, let's say, someone who may not be fully transitioned on the job and so forth. This may encourage that individual to do that, I would think. You know, plus, you know, the interesting thing here is that, you know, we have been working with this for some time now. You know, when I initially started working on this back in the summer, you know, I thought that DCCCD would be the first of the two-year colleges here in Texas to do that. When they finally had the vote on Tuesday, they were the third.
And there are about 50 to 55 community colleges or community college districts throughout Texas. Who are the other two that have protections now?
The other two that have protections are both in the Houston area. The first of the two-year colleges to adopt this protection was San Jacinto College in Pasadena, which, you know, those of you who are familiar with the Houston area, you know where Pasadena is. For those of you who are not, it's on the east side of Houston. And it's a fairly blue-collar, industrial kind of area.
It's where Urban Cowboy took place. It's where the oil refineries are.
Exactly. I mean, it really kind of stunned me. And, you know, I had no idea that they had done this, but I had done a presentation last summer at the Texas Transgender Non-Discrimination Summit in Houston. And so I started researching the two-year college policies, and I remember it was like Friday night about, you know, 12:45 in the morning, and I'm up late working on my presentation, and I'm literally going through all 50 some odd policies, and I see this, and I see that they've adopted it back. Oh, it hasn't even adopted a year now. It was adopted sometime last spring. And I thought, that's great, but odd.
Isn't that a random one to have chosen
exactly,
to do this first?
Exactly. But, so right. What happened is, once Sanjak had their policy, there were a variety of activists, you know, primarily from the transgender community, who approached Houston Community College. And they started working after the non-discrimination summit back in August with HCC, mm-hmm. and HCC, just before Christmas, adopted their own inclusive policies.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's distinctive about the Dallas policy is Dallas County Community College is actually the largest community college district in the state.
Yeah, I mean, you think of big colleges and universities in Texas. You know, most people would probably say UT Austin or A&M. Mm-hmm. And while that's true for the four-year colleges, you know, in reality, if you're talking, you know, the biggest districts, biggest institutions, you look to the two-year colleges. I mean, Dallas County Community College, as I mentioned, has, you know, 80,000 students spread out among their nine campuses. And the reason that, you know, but they're all getting, you know, one degree from one district. So that's considered, you know.
So it's considered one college.
One college.
Yeah. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I am here in the studio with Doc, who's helping me with the phones. And Raphael, stay with us. Raphael McDonald is with Resource Center Dallas. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Well, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it from myself, so I won't be tempted.
I used to do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple. I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at StopTextStopRex.org, brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I am here in the studio with Doc. Patty and Laurent will be back with us next week. We're talking to Raphael McDonald. He's with Resource Center Dallas. We're talking about trans protections that have gotten passed recently. Just yesterday, Dallas County Community College District passed three policies, one for their employees, two for their students, that cover sexual orientation was covered, gender identity, and gender expression. Raphael, tell us why one policy for the employees and yet two for the students?
Well, the employee policy covers harassment, retaliation, and employee code of conduct, and it rolls it all up into one policy. Student code of conduct policy is its own policy within the district, and then harassment and discrimination is its another policy in the district. You see the same kind of thing in the ISD policies. So when DISD revised several of its policies to make them more inclusive back in August, they did the same thing. There was a specific policy regarding stuff that goes in the student code of conduct book, as well as a specific policy that covers harassment, retaliation, discrimination.
Was the DISD policy change harder to accomplish?
Actually, no. It was, in my opinion, I think it was easier. That was, once again, this was a case of building off of stuff kind of thing. The DISD policy changes grew out of the anti-bullying policy that was adopted, way back in November 2010. The center, we put together kind of a group of various community leaders and stakeholders, and we started looking at how we could move the momentum forward, and their unanimous decision was to work on making other policies brought in line and make them more inclusive. We met with the attorney, the chief counsel for the district, I think in February of last year, and I had outlined I think two policies that they needed to make more inclusive. They got back to us, April or May of last year, and they said, well, actually, our legal team has looked over the policies, and it's actually closer to half a dozen policies that we need to make more inclusive.
So there, the delay was really a matter of going through their whole handbook and just making sure that everything worked.
Absolutely. And then, there were a couple of other delays, but they were delays outside of what we could control. One of them, I think, was the fact that Superintendent Hinojosa left. So there was kind of a little bit of an interim period there of, who's gonna run the district? And then second, the budget that the district needed to pass was delayed slightly because of the need for a special session down in Austin. Mm. And so, those are things that we could have no real influence over. So that kind of kicked things a little ways down. The plan was, I think initially they were going to have the changes, the various packet of policies changed in June, which would have been, great with Pride Month and all the rest of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But what ended up happening is they ended up getting kicked into August because they picked the month of July off. A couple of external factors that, influenced it.
But still in place for the new school year.
Right. And, the district immediately, when we talked to them back in February, it was, you're right, we need to make this all this language universal. We can't be talking about gender identity and gender expression in our anti-bullying policy and not cover it in our harassment policy and not cover it in the student code of conduct.
And that's something that's hard enough even for people in the LGBT community to understand and remember, okay, yeah, this is who I am, that's who I'm attracted to. But to go outside the community and say, well, here we're talking about gender expression, there we're talking about gender identity. What are you talking about?
Right.
So you do want everything to be parallel. You know, one of the things that you said was that what propelled the policy in DISD was bullying.
Right.
On the community college level, is that something that needs to be that we need to be concerned with, or is that really just something more of a policy that goes to high schools because you don't get to choose where you go to school or choose which classes you take to the same extent?
That's actually a great question. There is no specific policy, and this gets back to the fact that Texas Association of School Boards literally has a guidelines and suggestions for policies. They've got no policy at that level that specifically covers bullying, although it is understood that that would fall under the harassment policy. At least, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, okay, well, what's harassment and what's bullying?
Mm-hmm.
At the ISD level, there is a fairly bright line definition between what considers harassment and what's considered bullying. You know, bullying is kind of systemic over longer periods. You know, harassment can be kind of a one-off kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make that distinction at the two-year college level, either for employees or for students. So it's almost understood that that would fall under these policies that, you know, DCCC passed yesterday. And TASB, the Texas Association of School Boards, does not have a separate policy for anti-bullying like it does for the independent school districts. However, the independent school district's policy is an anti-bullying policy specifically for students. If you want to write in language such as DISD did, such as Fort Worth ISD did last year, you know, you have to find other creative places to put it in there.
Mm-hmm. Is part of that because once you're in college, you're considered an adult, and if somebody were to attack you, you can go to the police in the way a kid can't?
That could be. That could be. But, you know, I think that, you know, ultimately, it's what you put in the policies, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's that. And, you know, I don't think that TASB has gotten to the point yet of thinking to put that in, you know, at the two-year colleges. And, you know, that may be something that we'll need to go back and look at.
I'm wondering if also by the time you're in college, colleges kind of self-select out the kind of people who do bullying tend not to be in college. If somebody is a bully, it'll be reported as harassment before it gets to the point of bullying.
That could be.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, you get into workplace situations. You know, and you think about corporate workplace situations. I can't off the top of my head think of any, let's pick a major employer off the top of your head, an AT&T or an American Airlines or a TI or someplace like that, that has an anti-bullying policy. It would be covered under general, you know, harassment, and, you know, HR would respond appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, that may be its own thing.
Mm-hmm. Now that Dallas County Community College has this policy in place, do you expect other schools to follow suit?
Right. I would hope so. I would certainly hope so. I know that some of the same folks who worked on the policy down at HCC, they have been looking at and I think maybe engaged in some discussions with what is called North Central, what is called a Lone Star College, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the college that's based up in Montgomery County, just due north of Houston. And so they may be, I think, the next one. I know that, you know, Fairness Fort Worth has a copy of what we sent to the policies that were approved by Dallas County Community College. I know they have good communications with Tarrant County College, so who knows, we might see something happen there. And you know, there's you know, other districts here locally, you know, Collin College, that might, you know, we might want to look at and talk to the people up at CCGLA and see if they want to push that forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the other entities last year that passed new protections was DFW Airport. Tell us how that came about.
That was interesting in that I think that this was one of these cases of you don't know if you don't ask.
Mm-hmm.
After DART, and we all remember what that was like back in 2010, spring of 2010, spring/summer of 2010, started looking around to see what other entities started offering as policies. And the thing that struck me is that DFW International Airport did a lot of work in the diversity field, but had no protections at all for, you know, sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. And that kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
So during the summer of 2010,
No, go ahead.
Okay, sorry, I got a little bit of echo there in my ear.
Yeah.
But during the summer of 2010, wrote the airport and said, you know, we'd like you to consider doing this and love to sit down and talk with you. Their HR person was out for about a month sick, and finally we got a meeting in September 2010. It was a couple of us from the center and Thomas Annable from Fairness Fort Worth, and we laid out the case with their VP of HR, and she said, yeah, I think you're right. You know, we should be having it. Let me talk to the senior officials here at the airport. I think that the executive director can probably do this with a pen stroke. And sure enough, that's what happened when they came out with their policy revisions effective in November of 2010. Sexual orientation and gender identity were in there. Gender expression wasn't, but sexual orientation and gender identity were in the policies.
Okay. Does just having gender identity generally protect somebody who is transitioning, though?
Well, I think that, you know, the ideal is that it also includes gender expression,
mm-hmm.
particularly in those work environments where you're dealing with, let's say, uniforms and things of that nature. I mean, that would be the ideal thing. I mean, it provides a level of protection. It's not as comprehensive a protection as articulating both gender identity and gender expression.
But since none of it is included in any kind of law or federal policy, if somebody does sue based on or is discriminated against based on, they really don't have any protection, do they?
Well, you know, there is no federal end, as we all know, sadly,
mm-hmm.
and there's no state level protection. So, you know, it's based on the employer.
So it's really as good as the intent is. So
right, exactly. You know, what is the intent of the employer? What is that employer's commitment to a fair and inclusive workplace?
Right. So if DFW Airport has no intention to discriminate, the policy's fine because it says we're not going to discriminate. It doesn't matter so much what the wording is.
Exactly.
And if their intention is to discriminate, but okay, we'll just satisfy Raphael and his big mouth, then they can have all the wording there they want and do all the discriminating they want anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I think it goes to, you know, what is the intent of the policy? Is it just words on paper?
Right.
You know, what's your motivation behind it?
Right. One other area that the transgender community gained equality or non-discrimination, at least covered by non-discrimination last year, was Dallas County. That fight took about 5 weeks.
Although, in the blink of an eye, legislatively, right?
Yeah. Well, and also one of the differences is DISD board, Dallas County Community College board, they meet once a month, but the commissioner's court meets weekly.
Right. And,
so tell
us
what happened there.
Well, that was a case of, I think it was your colleague John Wright over at The Voice that initially broke the story that Dallas County had added sexual orientation protections.
And that was without much lobbying, right?
That was without, I think, probably any lobbying beyond, Judge Jenkins maybe telling Stonewall Democrats and others, you know, I'll get in and we'll do this.
Mm-hmm.
And
he just did it.
They just did it. But when they just did it, they did not realize the difference between sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. So, by definition, the transgender community was left out. And, you know, this was a case, I think, of, you know, if you were going to do this, you know, ask around.
Mm-hmm.
Ask around. Well, there's any of a number of us who would have been glad to tell you that, this should have been part of the initial thing. But
again, this is a good case of there was no malicious intent in omitting one group. It was really with all good intentions that they added it.
Right, it was with all good intentions they added it, but it wasn't thorough or complete. So, literally, I think within 6 to 12 hours, if that long, of John's story breaking, we were writing Judge Jenkins and members of the Commissioner's Court urging them to add these protections.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally it was a case of every meeting it ended up being a total of 5 meetings, but every meeting for 4 meetings having, you know, several members of the LGBT community come and tell their stories and explain why these protections are there. I spoke, Pamela Curry, Kelly Busey spoke, Maeve O'Connor from our board spoke, and, even Commissioner Price, after hearing Maeve's story about how she transitioned late in life to make sure that her wife received medical care for the cancer she was being treated for at the time, was an incredibly touching thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was an incredibly touching story that moved Commissioner Price. And ultimately, he was noncommittal on adding this and was the pivotal third vote to get it to happen.
Right. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with Doc, who's answering our phones for us. We're talking to Raphael McDonald. And Raphael, I really do appreciate your getting up this morning. You have what's going around all of a sudden.
You know, being up at this hour early on the radio, I feel like I should be asking for traffic and weather on the 8th.
Traffic's fine. Don't worry about it. And the weather, it's like 80 degrees and balmy outside. I like giving the wrong weather. Because any other station, you can go on and get the correct traffic and weather, right?
Yeah.
Come to KNON and get the wrong.
Or you can go to the internet. I mean, fortunately, that's one of the things that's hurting radio is that you can get an app on your phone that has the weather and an app on your phone that has the traffic.
And you can, the only place you can come to get the wrong weather is here on KNON. We'll be back. Raphael, stick with us. We have another segment, but we need to take a break.
KNON on Twitter at KNON893FM.
Follow us now.
Be the first to find out about KNON events and get updates on KNON. That's KNON893FM on Twitter for updates on benefits, programming, and more.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and we're talking to Raphael McDonald. We're talking about transgender protections, gender identity, gender expression. Dallas County Community College just added gender identity and expression to their policies yesterday. A number of organizations, companies, all sorts of groups have included transgender protections recently. Raphael, how many corporations do you know of that actually cover their transgender employees?
Well, if you look at the Fortune 500, from the most recent corporate equality index that Human Rights Campaign puts out, they say that just a slightly more than half of the Fortune 500 offers these non-discrimination protections now. And that's actually, you know, a quantum leap in less than a decade. I believe it was either 2002 or 2003 that there were only three companies on the Fortune 500 that did that.
Hmm.
So we've been seeing, particularly over the last decade, you know, a lot of growth in that sector. And if you go back and, you know, like I said earlier, the fact that there are now, 38,000 public sector employees in the immediate Dallas area that have these protections. You know, on the other side, you know, here in Fort Worth, where I call home, you know, the city of Fort Worth added those protections in November of 2009 and added them at Fort Worth ISD last June. So, you know, there's easily 45,000-46,000 plus covered across the Dallas-Fort Worth area now that weren't covered as recently as the summer of 2009.
Hmm. Do you know who any of those original three were?
Not off the top of my head. I suspect that American Airlines was one of the earliest of the companies. So I think that they would, if they weren't one of the original three, they were probably one of the original, you know, handful or double handful.
Hmm. That's interesting that that any Dallas company would be one of the pioneers in that. But that's,
well,
that's
American, you know, you go back and, you know, they're a great example of, you know, how a company initially wasn't terribly receptive to the LGBT community and then suddenly became one of their biggest and best known champions.
Right. Right.
You know, going back to the, you know, that incident, the letter, the comments from the pilot following the 93 March.
Right. You know? Right. And that is, we're coming up on 20 years really of that change in equality since that march in Washington. One of the other early pioneers in protecting their employees was Mobil.
Right.
And now ExxonMobil has not just a zero rating, but this year they went down to a negative rating.
Right. You know, so. And it's sad, it's embarrassing that, you know, they continue to do that. And I think that, you know, they're certainly ripe to make a change. You had pointed out, I think, to me off air at times that, you know, there were members of Exxon's employee base that were at the Out and Eagle conference this year.
Right. Well, one of the groups that's probably the most surprising that added protections based on sexual orientation this year was the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly the place where you expect equality.
Right, right.
How did that come about?
Well, you know, this wasn't anything that we worked on specifically for, there is a Dallas tie, but this wasn't anything specifically that Resource Center worked on. When the NFL negotiated their collective bargaining agreement, it was stuck in there that they would provide sexual orientation protections for players. You remember there was a lockout, and I probably say you may remember, I don't know how many folks are sports fans, I gotta remember that, that the NFL was the part of a lockout that delayed the beginning of the football season back during the summer.
Right.
They negotiated the agreement, and it went along and so forth, and then a blogger by the name of Pete Olson, who used to live here in Dallas, he now is a law student at Ohio State, does a blog called Wide Rights. If you don't read it, you should, so there's my plug for Pete. he, being a law school type, decided to look through the collective bargaining agreement and discovered that this thing had gotten slipped in. And, you know, that was huge news.
And one of the reasons it probably got slipped in is who the attorneys were for the players and the owners.
Right. Ted Olson and David Boies. Ted Olson represented the Players Association in and David Boies represented the owners.
And those two attorneys were the same attorneys who fought against Proposition 8.
Yeah, the Perry versus Schwarzenegger case,
right.
That is, you know, hopefully we'll hear back from the Ninth Circuit any day now.
Right.
So anyway, they were the two attorneys that were on both sides. And, you know, it was a good 6-7 weeks. Actually, it was the Friday before Pride that Pete published on his blog the fact that the sexual orientation had been added to the NFL collective bargaining.
Now, what you did with that was you said, let's see which sports have it, which sports don't have it. So which other sports had non-discrimination?
Well, at that time, and... You know, this was, you know, unfortunately, give an old reporter an idea, and, you know, he runs away with it to great lengths. I decided, okay, there's six major sports leagues in the United States. You know, the three biggies, the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA. And there's also the WNBA, the NHL, and Major League Soccer. And so I, you know, spent Saturday going through the policies and so forth, and was a bit surprised to discover that both the National Hockey League and Major League Soccer had non-discrimination policies that covered sexual orientation. You know, what's more, the NHL had put this in their collective bargaining agreement back in 2005, and Major League Soccer had put it in their collective bargaining agreement in 2004. And it was like, wow. Really?
And that was something nobody even knew about. It was
nobody even knew about or thought at the time was such a big deal, I guess. I mean, you know, that or it may have been just the pervasiveness of the Internet, and nobody even thought to go look.
And I think that's wonderful proof of the fact that including non-discrimination really doesn't affect a whole lot of people. It doesn't change the way stuff is done. It doesn't hurt anybody. It's just there. It just says, this is our policy. We don't discriminate. And not discriminating doesn't take up a whole lot of anybody's time.
Right, right.
It's just how people act toward
right.
each other.
So
what you did, you took this and ran with it.
Right, right. So, you know, by virtue of the fact that there were at that point three of the six sports leagues that had policies, that meant that there were three sports leagues that did not. Specifically, the National Basketball Association, Major League Baseball, and, surprisingly, the WNBA.
Well, and why didn't the WNBA want to protect the few straight players that they had?
That in itself is a really good question. I would have thought that they would have had those protections.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I guess it's maybe just a case of it hasn't come up yet.
Hmm.
Or nobody has thought to do anything with it. I really think
they should protect their straight players because they do have some.
They do have some, yes,
uh-huh.
indeed. Yes,
yeah.
indeed. I think their agreement comes up either this year or next year. I kind of think it's 2013. I think it was a 6-year deal that they signed back in 2007. And it may have been that in 2007 when they were negotiating that nobody thought to bring it up.
Right.
You know, I think it's probably fair to say that, you know, that when the contract comes up for renewal, it will be added. But, you know, it's kind of odd to think that they are, you know, at the end of this process, the only major sports league in America that doesn't provide these protections.
So what happened with the NBA? The NBA just started playing a couple of weeks ago.
The NBA added sexual orientation protections when their contract collective bargaining agreement was finally struck right between, I guess it was just the tentative deal was struck just during Thanksgiving weekend and then finalized the second week or so of December. So anyway, to get back to, you know, what we did, I decided, you know, nobody's really talking about this why, you know, here, this is a perfect example of, you know, something happening in a major sports league, and there's an opportunity here to encourage other sports leagues to follow suit. I knew that, you know, everybody had seen that there were, you know, stories. The NBA was locked out, and there might be a season, there might not be a season. They wanted to hurry and have negotiations to save a season. Well, let's ask them. Put that language in there. I knew that Major League Baseball had been talking, and they'd been talking for some months, but it seemed to be fairly quiet, and you know, there didn't seem to be, you know, real threats of labor negotiations problems. So I thought, well, why don't I just write a letter? You know, I write letters to lots of people, and why don't I just write one to the NBA and the Players Association and encourage them to add non-discrimination language to their contract? I asked Cece. I said, you know, I think this is probably a good idea, and she said, okay. So, you know, what does this do in terms of, you know, what the center does in terms of its mission? And I said, well, ultimately, you know, a couple things. Number one, it's an employment issue, and we do employment issues. You know, whether it's Dallas County or DISD or DART or DFW Airport, ultimately, it's these are employees who are paid for their services, whether it's dribbling a basketball down a court or, you know, throwing a pitch 95 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned that, you know, the fact that, you know, the Dallas Mavericks are two and a half miles from the Resource Center. And Mark Cuban, among the sports owners here in North Texas, I think is probably the most open to the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
So, wrote a letter and promptly heard nothing and heard nothing and heard nothing. And so at this point, the contracts start, the negotiations break down, the season falls apart, and I just kind of thought, okay, this is not going to go anywhere. Just before that, I decided, well, you know, it's time to go ahead and write the letter to Major League Baseball. I'm not going to wait for the NBA to figure out what it wants to do. Let's write a similar letter to Major League Baseball. And I thought, okay, well, fine. I'll write the letter when the Rangers season ends. And honestly, even a fan, I didn't think they were going to go back to the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, okay, well, I'll write the letter probably around the middle of October. And I had written a letter, and I kept having to revise it when we won the championship, and then we went into the World Series. Literally, I updated the date on the letter every single day and had one version for if the Rangers won and one version if the Rangers lost. And then sent the letter to Major League Baseball on Halloween, on the 31st. A week later, on November 7th, I got a letter back from Major League Baseball, a letter from a man by the name of Robert Manfred, who is their executive vice president for labor negotiations and was the chief negotiator for the owners. And he said, thank you for the letter on the 31st. We appreciate your concern for Major League Baseball. We found it very constructive, and although I'm not liberty to discuss the, you know, the particulars of the contract on the table, I think I can safely tell you that the issues that you have raised in your letter will be addressed in a satisfactory manner. And I got this letter the same day that I got the letter from DCCC saying that they weren't adding the protection. Literally one of these yin and yang kind of days.
And it's one of those things when a high-profile organization, such as Major League Baseball, adds protection based on sexual orientation, it allows people to say, well, if baseball can do it, well, if football can do it, then we can do it.
Right, right. You know, and then a week later, I get a letter from Commissioner Selig himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the real surprise. It's like, okay, well, fine, so they... You know, the commissioner gets the letter that I sent him, and he sends it off to one of his executive VPs who's doing the negotiating, and, you know, say, you're right, him back. And then he takes the time to send me his own letter back, which he describes as thoughtful and constructive, and that he would pass along.
Mm-hmm.
So, yay! Surprise.
And so they ended up passing it?
They ended up passing it, they ended up adding it, and... we shared the letters with John at The Voice, and, you know, that ended up being kind of, you know, that story.
And So everybody now has it because the NFL or the NBA also passed
the NBA added it. You know, I heard from the NBA after the contract, after all of the points were reached, after the players ratified it, after the owners ratified it. I got about a one-line email back from the NBA's vice president of communications, only because I sent him yet another email asking if it was there. I think I did a lot of asking to the NBA and didn't get a lot of answers.
And we are completely out of time. And, short story, they passed it. The only ones who don't have protections now are the lesbians of the WNBA, not that I'm calling. Raphael, I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Feel better,
David. All right.
I will talk to you soon. And that's it for us here at Lambda Weekly. Next week, our guest is Robert Camina. His new documentary is The Raid on the Rainbow Lounge, and he will be with us here in the studio.